The show is live and local. It's your connection to local music and more. And our conversation today is with a man who brings both music and a lot more to his productions. He's Mark Morris. He has the Mark Morris Dance Group, and they are in their 11th year of residency at the Krannert Center in Urbana, and with performances tonight and tomorrow and some ancillary activities as well. And we'll be talking to Mark about music and dance and wherever else the conversation takes us. It's live and local. Stay tuned. Yeah, laughter is right, and that was the point. This is a CD that I really enjoy a lot. It was brought here or given to us by a quite legitimate classical violinist who happens to be involved in the group. Her name is Lara St. John, and this is a group that calls itself Polkastra. Their disc called Apocalypse Now, and that was track 9 called the Ludwig van Polka, and probably tested your name that tune abilities to see which who wrote all the various pieces and what were they in fact from. And I don't think I got them all, but I did get some. And that was heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, sort of a quirky way of introducing my guest for the hour, who is Mark Morris. He has the Mark Morris Dance Group. They are at the Krannert Center this week for performances and engagement activities. And we're pleased to have him back on the show. You were here, well, just about a year ago when you were here on your 10th year of residency. Now you're in your 11th at the Krannert Center. Thanks for joining us. And what's your affinity with the Krannert Center that keeps bringing you back? I mean, you could go anywhere you want.
Well, no, we can't go anywhere we want. We can only go where we're invited.
Well, that's a good start, but you could always say no.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'll bet you do many times.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised how many times I don't get the option of saying no because no one's asked. But the Krannert Center, I didn't know how many years. I just heard that. I knew it was a lot.
According to the press release, you return for your 11th season of engagement and performance.
That's great. It's the 30th anniversary of my company. So I've been around for a while. Yeah, exactly.
Congratulations.
But, you know, Mike Ross, who is fabulous and who runs the programming at the Krannert Center, is a wonderful, wonderful, smart, music-minded gentleman who has, I think, great taste in that he brings us every year. So, you know, and the programming there is wonderful. So for us to be part of that consistently means that we, you know, I don't mean this to sound insulting, but one develops an audience, meaning that the more we perform somewhere, the more people can watch the language of our work, and we can do pretty much whatever we have in the repertory. So it's a wonderful freedom to have to do anything, and that's what we do.
And the freedom that you give yourself always has one restriction in at least the type of music. That probably has other restrictions, but you always use live music.
Yes.
And it's always or nearly always classical in some way. Or not. I'm trying to remember if that's true.
By classical, we mean good or concert music, or I don't know.
Well, that's a hard term to define.
Yeah, it's certainly not all classical period music, but it's all, I don't know. I have very good musicians, and I guess I mostly would do what would be called classical music, yes.
So on this concert, these two performances, and you're doing the same show twice, right?
That's right.
Thursday and Friday, tonight and tomorrow.
Friday and Saturday.
Is it Friday and Saturday?
Yeah, because my company just gets in today.
Oh, well, there you go. Then yeah, I guess you're not doing it. I'm getting there's so many things going on this weekend of interest, and I'm getting the days mixed up. Okay, I'll take your word for it. Tomorrow,
yeah.
Well, people have a little time to think about it then. Tomorrow and Saturday at the Krannert Center, and one of the pieces involves all Mozart. Is he a particular favorite of yours, or just these pieces?
Well, you know, Mozart is a deep and a deep favorite of mine for many, many years. In fact, I was probably a little bit late coming to be interested in Mozart's music. It wasn't probably till I was 18 or 19 that I worshipped Mozart's music. I, like a lot of ignorant young people, think that it sounds easy and, you know, all sounds the same and sort of la-di-da. But then I started listening to the operas, and that changed my life. And then I went backwards from the operas into the rest of the repertory and fell in love with everything. So this particular program, we're doing two pieces of Mozart. One is the Piano Concerto No. 11 in a reduction for string quartet, which Mozart wrote himself, or approved anyway, and then a sonata for two pianos. So it's part of a full evening program that we did when we have a full orchestra, and then there's another concerto afterwards. But we do a touring version, which is gorgeous and beautiful. And so it's these two Mozart pieces, and then another piece by Lou Harrison, the grand duo for violin and piano. So it's two doses of Mozart, and then this piece of Lou Harrison's, which contrasts and compares in a gorgeous way. The Mozart piece as a full length was called Mozart Dances, and we premiered it at Mostly Mozart in New York with Emmanuel Axe and Yoko Nozaki as the pianists. And we do that it's a giant orchestra show. We don't do it very many places, but I meant these Mozart dances to be able to stand alone, so we can do any of the three of them on a program with other pieces, so that they go together, but they can be separated without too much trauma. So we do the first two pieces and of the Mozart, and then the Harrison after that.
So the Mozart dance is complete is three pieces.
Right.
And what's the, I mean, not that we're going to hear it now, but what's the third piece of music?
It's one of the last pieces he wrote, the Piano Concerto No. 27. So very late, gorgeous concerto.
So lost for piano in that piece. You know, yeah. You said you came to Mozart late at 18. I was a music major in college, and I remember even after college, I would go to all Mozart concerts, whether it was chamber music or otherwise, and I would always fall asleep.
Oh, that's good to hear.
So I think it took till at least my mid-20s, uh-huh. if not after I got into grad school, where I started to really enjoy and appreciate and never fall asleep on
right.
Mozart.
Well, the thing is, you know, I had actually been considering in doing an evening of Mozart, which I decided to do a few years ago for various reasons. But my first idea was to do a concerto, three different concertos for different instruments, horn or clarinet or piano, or I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I thought it should be a mixed bag. And then I decided to make it a lot more work for the pianists involved. So it's a real immersion in piano music. But also, speaking of the operas, I really started hearing the concertos as very dramatic and very sort of character driven, that the piano is almost, you know, a personality, and they're very operatic pieces. They're very moody and very emotional and surprising, and they're just great.
And do you choose the pianist because he happens to be the pianist with your company, or because you choose the pianist who will have the sort of personality that you'd like for the pieces, for the dances to have?
Well, like I said, the original was with Manny Axe, and that was part of the commission. And now we do it with two pianists who work with me, because, you know, for the double we need two pianists. And it's the principal pianist is a gentleman named Colin Fowler, who plays for all of my rehearsals when I'm making up a dance, and plays all the piano parts in my shows, and also plays harpsichord when I conduct things that need a harpsichord. So he's a very well-rounded keyboardist. He's an organist, too.
And you obviously like his playing and his stylizations,
yeah.
Or you wouldn't have him in the company.
Right, exactly.
How often do you conduct on your programs?
Not a lot. I just do a couple of pieces. I do Dido and Aeneas, which I've done here, and I also do the Gloria of Vivaldi. I conduct that, and I'm working up some other stuff. There'll be more, but I'm not giving up what I'm doing. I'm just sort of adding an occasional foray into conducting, which is fun and terrifying and interesting, as you know.
even when you're a regular conductor, it's all those things.
Yeah, right. It
remains all those things. Well, let's hear one of the Mozart pieces. And can you...
No. Oh, go ahead.
Okay, then.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, can you give any kind of a description of sort of what goes on stage as we listen to this?
If this is the sort of minuet that's the last movement of that concerto,
it is the sort of minuet.
Okay. Well, I treat it as sort of a minuet. There's a little bit of historically informed dancing in it, and in just the minuet, just a couple of minuet phrases. But this dance, I can tell you, this movement of this dance, the last movement of this concerto, it's for all women in my company. There are no gentlemen in this particular part of this dance. And it all goes in one direction from left to right by the viewer's eyes, pretty much.
Meaning they've got to run around backstage a lot.
A lot, yeah. But we don't see that.
And we'll leave it at that. It's the last movement of Mozart's 11th piano concerto in F major, if you must know. And Daniel Barenboim is both pianist and conductor in this performance with the Berlin Philharmonic. So you won't have full orchestra in the pit on Friday or Saturday, but I think it says string quartet.
That's right.
And so you'll have to fill in the blanks at that time, except the dancing will fill in all the blanks.
Yeah, and the piece sounds gorgeous. There's nothing really missing.
Well, it should be very exciting. Here we go. On Live and Local, we're talking with Mark Morris of the Mark Morris Dance Group. Was the last movement of the 11th piano concerto of Mozart with Daniel Barenboim playing and conducting with the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra here on Live and Local. And that is one of the Mozart pieces featured in the Mozart Dances by Mark Morris, which is going to be presented at the Krannert Center in Urbana Friday and Saturday. 7:30 performances in each case. And Mark Morris is with us on the show. I will mention first, before we continue the conversation, that our programs today on Live and Local are made possible by Women's Health Practice and Dr. Suzanne Troopin, offering obstetrics, gynecology, and fertility services on Neal in Champaign. Women's Health Practice is a Health Alliance medical plan provider and is accepting new patients. More information is available at womenshealthpractice.com. Mark, mostly, if not always, at your performances, you get, certainly at the Krannert Center, you get involved personally and other members of your troupe with some non-performance events, getting
right
together with students and other things. What are you involved with for this particular residency?
Well, it's very interesting because we every year that we come here, we performed in Chicago last weekend, and then several of us came directly here to teach. So we've been here since Monday, and the performance isn't until tomorrow. And so four of the dancers in my company, plus my executive director and me, and then also my technical director, are giving classes. There are lots of dance classes. And I took a class. I don't know what everybody does. I see them at night after they've come back from their trips. But they're teaching people all different ages and different classes at the university also. And I, today after this, I do my second session with the opera department. And I give them some breathing and action and rhythm sort of exercises. And then I listen to arias and coach them from my point of view, which is my point of view, as opposed to their wonderful teachers that they've been working with. I took a class, sort of an aesthetics-based class, on a walk through the Krannert Art Museum to look at paintings and sculpture and talk about that and my preferences and theirs, and, you know, just talk about sort of why something is interesting or not to look at. Let's see. And then yesterday I taught a music theory class which was mostly rhythm and walking and listening to some music and identifying unusual rhythms. So some listening and some clapping and some talking, and that's what I do, whatever I can think of that will suit whatever class I'm teaching.
And what kind of response did you get from the students in the music theory class?
Well, usually I give something that's a little bit frustrating. So, you know, you used to, they were mostly dancers in this class, taking this music theory class, and they'd done a lot of drumming. So they were learning to notate rhythm. And so I did a lot of rhythm identification, and they had to sort of reproduce things and walk and clap rhythms at the same time, which is not easy. So you get used to what you do all the time, and then someone comes and throws a wrench in it, and that's me and the wrench. So it's frustrating and fun, and it probably makes more questions than answers, but that's my goal.
Well, I guess this would probably be a question for the folks in the dance department. I wouldn't have expected, for some reason, that dancers are expected to, or that some of them do, take music theory. Were there also music majors in there, as far as you know?
In this particular class, no. It was a music theory class for dance people, which is great. You know, when people ask me what they should learn in order to be good dancers, I, of course, give the usual thing. You know, you should know how to change a tire and to speak a little bit of French and, you know, study music and read a lot of books. You know, so, you know, participate. Go to performances. Do things that aren't what you're used to doing. And in particular, I would very strongly stress music. Consciousness anyway, if not a heavy education in composition or theory or performance, at least be able to listen to it in a more informed way, because it can only help you dancing.
How does music theory help dancing? I mean, specifically music theory.
Well, music theory doesn't always help musicians. You know, sometimes it's the thing you sleep through. It's the Walter Piston point of view or something. But no, just to understand the makings of, you know, whether you choose to perform or choreograph with music the way I do on purpose, very passionately and directly. I mean, one can make up dances in any way. But I sort of think, I've always thought that singers and dancers have a great deal in common in that. That's why I love working with singers. I use a lot of vocal music. I think that, you know, both dancers and singers kind of alone amongst those arts don't use equipment. You know, there's nothing between a singer and an audience, and the same with a dancer. So it's just you and your own physical potentiality. And so I think the more versatility you have and the more sort of broad knowledge of the related arts, the better. Because I think, you know, I think that choreography, at least from my standpoint, is very much related to musical composition. Whether I choreograph with music or not, the fundamentals of repetition and inversion and, you know, echoing, imitation, those things come into play constantly, daily in my work in the studio. And if dancers can understand that from another point of view, that only helps.
So I assume that you're one of the choreographers who makes a piece on a piece of music rather than starting with movement and then adding music later.
Yes. I know very few people who do that. I mean, some people make up dances with no music at all, which I've done a little bit of. I guess it used to be old-fashioned, but now it's new-fashioned or newly rediscovered or something, that music and dancing go just fine together. And so I always, always start with a piece of music and then decide to make up a dance to it and go from there.
I've seen some choreographers work where they seem to be almost inventing the choreography as they're teaching it. Do you do that, or do you have it pretty well in mind before you get with the dancers and you say, now I want you to do this and this and this?
Well, the preparation I do is not coming up with steps. You know, it's not coming up with moves necessarily. I listen to music and study it and make notes and make decisions about what I think might happen. And then I work in the studio on the spot with people there. So it's not exactly that I'm improvising, because it's based on what I already have gleaned from studying the music and thinking about it. So I make up the actions in front of people knowing with a certain amount of certainty that it will go in this direction. But even if I'm making up a solo for somebody, I have the whole company learn it. Everybody learns everything, and then what I choreograph, they learn it and play it back to me. They dance it back to me, and then I change things or make things, you know, face another way or change tempo or adjust everything, change the position of the hand or make it, you know, move people around in the room till it's something I like. So then those sort of fragments of choreography, which relate usually to a tune or a rhythm or some sort of motif from the music, I can then work with that material and build a dance out of it. So there's very little, you know, sort of free improvisation, which I think is not very interesting and usually pretty limiting. There's not a lot of it, but of course there's always decisions to be made at the moment of performing, which is of course why one reason that I insist on living musicians, because I have living dancers and I hope a living audience. So we want that to all be happening at the moment.
Well, and although it won't be improvisation in the actual performance, mm-hmm. just the fact that the players in the pit might do something differently, they might take a different tempo than they did the night mm-hmm. before, there's going to have to be at least some awareness on the part of the dancers that, you know, maybe what we're going to do is going to end up different also.
Absolutely. It's full awareness. You know, we take the, you know, just to step off into a dance and meet a musician on the downbeat of something takes an enormous amount of trust and practice and confidence. So we work together all the time, and it's second nature, so that the dancing isn't being accompanied by music and the music isn't having like a dream vision of dancing. I really want all of us to be doing the same thing. And of course, I have a lot to say with what that thing is, but still it's these people, these musicians and dancers executing, I hope it survives, but executing this work at that second for people who are watching it. So there's always tiny adjustments and big adjustments to be made constantly throughout a performance.
Well, and even though the performance isn't improvised, I wonder if an analogy might be made that when you're, once you've created the performance, created the piece, mm-hmm. Not improvising at that moment, but sort of, and then, you know, as you said, players feed it back to you, it might be sort of like a jazz group that creates a piece, which may not have been written down, mm-hmm. but once it's recorded, there's the piece.
Right. Yeah. And of course, like any live concert, you'll never see it or hear it the same way again. That's it. And it's not recorded. And it, you know, it was fabulous or horrible to varying degrees every night. And you keep the thing is that people imagine that improvisation in a certain sense is liberating and you just come up with something. And of course, it's very difficult. And to be a very good improviser takes a lot of practice and experience. And but, you know, to just do what you want is neither interesting nor liberating, really, to a viewer or an auditor. And so people think that that would make it more interesting and more fun and more creative, God forbid. So what we're trying to do is the same thing every night. You know, we're doing this piece, playing this piece, and dancing this piece. The text of these pieces remain constant, and it still has to be brand new every night because, you know, it is. You're a different person now than you were last night.
Well, it's like any classical musician or anybody who plays a piece that is written down. Mm-hmm. It's going to be different according to who's dancing mm-hmm. and according to the night and so on. Let's hear the other Mozart piece that is going to be on your programs this week. We're talking with Mark Morris, whose dance group is at the Krannert Center this week with concerts on Friday and Saturday night at 7:30. And one of those pieces is called Mozart Dances. Two of the three works of the two of the three parts of the total work are going to be presented. Mm-hmm. What made you pick the second movement, this gorgeous slow movement of his Sonata for Two Pianos?
Well, we do the whole piece in the concert. It's just the centerpiece of the program is the slow movement of this double sonata. And it's funny because when I was first, you know, deciding what music I wanted to use, I was listening to the double piano concerto, which is a fabulous, beautiful piece. And then I thought, and then I would, you know, to play that piece for other people in a recording, I would say, okay, but listen to this first to get ready for it. And I would play this slow movement that we're about to hear, because it's a miracle of a composition. It's so surprising, and lots of, you know, surprise dissonances. There's sort of, you know, clashes in it that are so wonderful, and they just keep stacking up in a way that only two pianists can do on two pianos. So it's a little bit mechanical, because to stay tightly unified with another keyboardist is a very tricky thing, you know, because you get so used to minute sort of interpretations of, you know, just fingering and pedaling that as a solo you take for granted. But when you put two people at it, it makes it very complicated, and it requires very, very deep listening and coordination. So this piece is somehow heartbreaking, and I don't know why. It's one reason I had to make up a dance to it.
And we're going to hear the wonderful pianists Murray Pariah and Radu Lupu in the second movement of Mozart's Sonata in D for two pianos here on Live and Local. What a gorgeous piece of music. The second movement of Mozart's Sonata for Two Pianos in D with Murray Pariah and Radu Lupu in that performance. And you can hear the piece and see it, actually, in a performance by the Mark Morris Dance Group Friday and Saturday at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana as part of his piece called Mozart Dances. And Mark Morris is with us on Live and Local today. Our program is made possible with support from Sinfonia da Camera, presenting Nature's Majesty on Saturday, March 12th at 7:30 p.m. at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The program celebrates the majesty of the natural world with familiar works from the movies. More information is available at 333-6280. And Mark, as I was listening to that piece, aside from just appreciating its beauty and thinking, you know, this would be a piece to be listening to in your easy chair and just relaxing after whatever stresses you may have had from the day, I was trying to imagine what you do with it on stage.
Well, in this case, like the first segment of Mozart's music that we listened to, which is all women, this movement is all men. So this whole double piano sonata is for the men in the company, with a guest appearance by the women, and vice versa for Concerto 11. So it's half of the company in each of these pieces, with guest appearances by the other half, the other sex half.
What does it mean when you have women do something versus men do something? Why men or women? Is there a concrete reason, at least in this case, or
well,
usually?
my sort of sex politics over the years, you know, I always imagined that everyone had absolute equality. That was my mission, and it is. You know, in the early days when I choreographed something, if everyone in my company couldn't do the move, I wouldn't use it. So, you know, depending on different people's specialties, and that was very interesting and limiting. And then working with, you know, and I love that men and women are different from one another. I think that's fabulous and interesting. You know, I wish there were even more sexes than there are. Well, there are, depending on who you ask, but. So in working with a company that's always, you know, half the members in my company are men and half are women, I keep it that way so that it's very versatile. Everybody knows everything. Almost all of my work doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman doing it. Very often, you know, a woman will understudy a man and vice versa. I don't care about that in most situations. But working with classical ballet companies, which I do a lot, the kind of technique that they use is extremely different. Men dance in a particular way and women dance in another way. And it's not just because of point shoes, and it's a different aesthetic and a different history. And it's really, really interesting and strange. I don't agree with all of it. I don't like all of it. But in the case of my company, I'd always done dances, you know, within bigger pieces. There's often a men's dance or a women's dance, because I like that, partly because of my background in folk dancing, where very often the two sexes don't have physical contact in dancing, that there's a women's line or circle and a men's line or circle, and they do the same moves or not. And it's an interesting kind of thing. And then they dance together. So I wanted to pull this piece apart and have, and it didn't really matter which piece of music it was. I did that sort of randomly. So there's a women's dance with a guest appearance by men, and then there's a men's dance with a guest appearance by women. And then the Concerto 27 is everybody together at last. And in this case, the everybody together part is the Lou Harrison piece. So it's really, you know, in case you've ever encountered men and women, they function differently, and it's really very interesting, and not without frustration. You know, the stereotypes are stereotypes partly because some of it is sometimes true. You know, in a rehearsal, when I'm working with a group of men on one side of the room and a group of women on the other side of the room, the men sort of stand with their arms folded a distance apart, and the women generally are talking to each other and solving a problem. So usually men make problems and women solve problems. That's the easy way to put it. So, you know, and they're all wonderful artists and they're all friends of each other. It's just that I wanted a community of just one sex for each of these dances. And it, whatever that does, I don't know. The other people could learn it and do it, and it would be gorgeous. But it's just how I set this up. It was sort of an experiment.
In some of your pieces that are recreations of stories, for example, Romeo and Juliet.
Right.
You do have women play men.
Right.
Anyway, although I don't remember that you had men play women.
I do in The Hard Nut. In my Nutcracker, there are a lot of roles that are en travesti. And that's also just an old, wonderful theater tradition. And, you know, famously in my Nutcracker, The Hard Nut, I also have Snowflakes, the waltz of the waltz of the Snowflakes is men and women as snowflakes. But as far as I know, you know, snowflakes aren't gendered.
Yeah, there's no sex to water.
Yeah.
As far as we know, as you said.
Exactly. I wouldn't know. If I were water and met water, I would know if there was an attraction.
Well, there must be, because it holds together, doesn't it?
Yes, that's right. It does.
H2 and O. It's a menage a trois, actually. Yeah, we'll leave that alone. The other piece that you're doing does have the music of Lou Harrison,
right,
who is not somebody that probably most musicians, for that matter, have heard of, much less non-musicians or dancers. Why Lou Harrison and why the grand duo?
Well, I have to tell you, either you adore Lou Harrison or you've never heard of him. Those are the two possibilities. That there's something that's so kind and so open and generous about his music that it's irresistible. And not everything he wrote is a great masterpiece, but he was a brilliant, open-hearted and open-eared fellow. And, you know, he had a great deal of experience in what we call, for some reason, non-Western music. He was an expert in Korean court music, gamelan music from Java and Bali, Chinese music, ancient musics of, you know, the Mesopotamia. He was an Esperantist.
Native American music also.
Oh, right, yeah. That's right, Native American music as well. And he was a wonderful composer. He built gamelan orchestras. He taught himself every instrument that he was writing for. He would learn enough to be able to do it, to compose for it with some fluency. And he was a friend of mine. I choreographed probably 7 or 8 pieces to his music, including a commission, a piece one can buy a recording of called Rhymes with Silver, he wrote for my company to dance to. So he was a wonderful, wonderful guy. This particular piece, the grand duo for violin and piano, is just that. It's a giant, wild, beautiful piece with a million different tones and colors and moods. And it's a piece that I choreographed a long time ago. It's something that we do a lot. It's always in the active repertory. And it's for the whole company. And it's a real sort of knockdown, drag out dance.
And there's 5 different movements in the grand duo. You use 4 of them.
Right.
And we're going to hear right now the second one, which has the very intriguing title of Stampede. I've never heard the piece, so I'm curious to see what happens.
Well, brace yourself.
Mark Morris is with us here on Live and Local, and it's music by Lou Harrison. He's called Stampede. It's the second movement of the Grand Duo for Violin and Piano by Lou Harrison. And this performance was by violinist Jennifer Koh and pianist Reiko Uchida here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And you can hear the rest of the piece, or nearly the rest of the piece, played by the ensemble attached to the Mark Morris Dance Group. And, of course, the Mark Morris Dance Group will dance it in the program at the Krannert Center Friday and Saturday night. Repeat the same performance each night, so you won't miss anything if you miss the one night. And you can even go here, see it twice if you want. 7:30 Friday and Saturday. And we have just a couple of more minutes with Mark Morris here. I do need to put in our events calendar for today. There's an awful lot of interesting stuff going on, so let's see what I can run down. Tonight is opening night for A Midsummer Night's Dream. It's a Bacchanal. That's Shakespeare's play with a twist or two. Opens tonight at 7:30 at the Krannert Center. The Wind Ensemble at Eastern Illinois University is giving a concert tonight called British and American Band Classics. That's at the Dowden Fine Arts Center in Charleston at 7:30. The musical Once Upon a Mattress is at Parkland College Theater tonight at 7:30. The Harding and Hinesley Symphonic Bands play at the Krannert Center tonight at 7:30. The Parkland Concert Band presents the music of Mark Hayes along with the Mohammed Seymour High School Choirs at Mohammed Seymour High School tonight at 7 o'clock. It's Pagliacci playing jazz at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 9:30. A show called Solid Gold Cadillac, put on by the Community Players Theater in Bloomington, tonight at 7:30, and Friday and Saturday with a Sunday matinee at 2:30. It's Hot Tuna Blues at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Joshua James plays folk music at the Illinois Wesleyan University Student Center in Bloomington tomorrow night at 7. The Champaign Park District Dance Arts School presents The Fairy Doll tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Virginia Theater in downtown Champaign. It's Grassroots Revival at the Independent Media Center tomorrow night in Urbana at 6 o'clock. At the Bement Country Opry, it's the band there with Mike Porter and Marsha Banning in Bement tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. The In Your Ear Big Band from Parkland College is at the Cowboy Monkey in Champaign tomorrow night at 6:30, and pianist Ian Hobson plays at 7:30 tomorrow night at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Lots more going on, but that's what we have time to mention. We also have support for our show today from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the series collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 2 to 6 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. This is Illinois Public Media, WYNL FM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. And it turns out that I have spoken through the last couple minutes we had, Mark. But thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
It's been a fun hour.
Thanks. Come and see our beautiful show.
Well, it is always that. And I think people will have a blast. Here's the very end of Lou Harrison's Grand Duo. It's the polka.